This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Since the beginning of the 20th century, we have lost over 95% of the world's wild tiger population. So Global Tiger Day was launched actually during the last Chinese New Year of the Tiger back in 2010, with the aim to double the global population of wild tigers by the next year of the tiger, which is in 2022. It's celebrated annually on the 29th of July. And I find out how far along we've come to reaching that goal from Dr. Mark Ryan Damaraj, who's spearheads the Worldwide Fund for Nature Malaysia's Tiger Landscape. And he will also discuss WWF Malaysia's efforts to get our tiger numbers up and how they're empowering local communities to aid in the protection of tigers. Welcome, Mark. How are you today?
Thank you, Juliet.
Good to have you on the show. So, Mark, I understand you are the country's only PhD holder on Malayan tiger ecology. How and why did you get interested in tigers?
Well, I mean, I've always had a keen curiosity for wildlife since I was young. Which eventually led me to joining WWF Malaysia in 2004. Back then, my role was to try to figure out the number of tigers in a place called Jeli in Kelantan. Mm-hmm. And it was a place where there was a lot of human tiger attacks.
Okay.
And since then,
tigers attacking humans, or humans attacking tigers?
Tigers attacking humans.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it came to a point where the chief minister of Kelantan wanted to shoot all the tigers in that area back in 2000. And there was a public outcry, and that's when we stepped in and said that we will try to figure out some mitigation measures in that area.
Okay, all right. So that's already been 8 years. So, I mean, how has the progress been specifically in Jeli?
Well, I mean, in Jeli, basically, since 2006, there has been no fatal attacks of tigers on humans.
Mm-hmm.
However, the tiger population has also declined in that area, easily by 60%.
60?
Yeah. So in retrospect, I think the decline of the conflict is mainly due to the decline of tiger numbers.
Okay. All right. And maybe you can tell me a little bit about that. What are our numbers like, the local tiger population? So the Malayan tiger, obviously.
Right. I think in the 1950s, we thought we had about 3,000 tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's plausible if you look at the amount of tiger habitat back then. And in 2003, we were down to 500. And in 2014, we've down to basically 250 now.
And that's 2014, so we don't actually have like maybe 2018 numbers, yeah, as such?
2019, the government, Department of Wildlife and National Parks and NGOs will come up with the latest estimate. In fact, it will be the first time ever that we've done a national tiger census in Malaysia.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, we are also carrying out our surveys in Belum Temenggor, which is one of the three priority sites in Peninsula Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not looking so good.
Okay. All right. So let's just pivot a little bit. And how are tigers doing globally? Would you know those numbers as well?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the last century, we thought we had about 100,000 tigers, right? And we're now down to 3,890 tigers. So about 3,900 tigers. In 2010, we thought we had about 3,200 tigers.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a slight increase, but that's mainly due to two or three countries that have afforded higher protection for tigers, namely India, Nepal, and Russia. And, you know, I mean, without proper protection for tigers, you're going to have local extinctions of these animals in a lot of countries. So places like Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, they don't have tigers anymore.
Mm-hmm. And some places in Indonesia, was it Bali as well that used to have tigers and now?
Yeah.
I mean, that happened a while ago, actually, didn't it?
So we had three subspecies that is no longer with us, basically the Bali, the Caspian, and the Javan.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to lose the South China tiger as well. But, you know, I mean, subspecies, regardless of what species they were, it's important that, I mean, within the geographic scope that we try to maintain viable populations.
Mm-hmm.
So in Malaysia, in 2004, the tigers found in Malaysia were recognized as a subspecies of its own. That is why they're calling it Malayan tiger. But recent studies have now come to show that there's, recent genetic studies, I should say, that there's only maybe two subspecies. So basically the ones that you can find in Sumatra and the continental tigers, basically everywhere else.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, regardless, the Malayan tiger is distinct on its own because, you know, if you look at it geographically, we share our borders with Thailand, but our tiger populations do not actually intermix with the population in the interiors of Thailand.
Okay.
So it is distinct in that sense.
Okay, and I mean, you know, the Malayan tiger is held as a symbol for so many things in Malaysia, you know, but I don't know, do people actually know much about it? You know, from your line of work, have you noticed that people actually, I guess, show an interest in preserving their numbers?
I think you'd be surprised, actually, that, you know, a lot of people don't know that we have tigers in Malaysia. I've spoken to, you know, randomly to people in the streets, sure. In the malls, and, you know, a lot of people don't really know that we have tigers in Malaysia.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, the very fact that we have two tigers in the coat of arms and it's supposed to symbolize bravery and courage and, you know, it's just very depressing to know that, you know, tiger numbers are actually going down.
Mm-hmm. Despite all the efforts. So maybe you can walk us through the list of threats that they're facing. What are some of the more critical ones as well?
I think tigers, you know, regardless whether in Malaysia or elsewhere, are basically threatened by habitat loss, which is basically conversion of the habitat of its forests. Fragmentation by infrastructure, for example, like roads. Degradation by logging as well. But the main threat is basically poaching. Poaching of tigers and their prey. A lot of people don't consider the second factor, which is poaching of prey, but it has a huge impact in terms of trying to sustain a good tiger population.
Mm-hmm.
So if the prey numbers go down, the reproduction of tigers also go down.
Of course.
But, you know, I mean, essentially, poaching is the biggest threat for tigers everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And I think I just wanted to touch on the infrastructure bit. I mean, like, you know, how building roads actually affects their crossings, for example, or their, you know, trying to get from one place to the other, essentially. And I think everyone remembers this story, was it a year or 2 years ago, where a pregnant tiger was actually killed by a vehicle of some sort, right? Yeah.
So I mean that's just a direct mortality.
Mm-hmm.
If a vehicle knocks down a tiger. But I mean, if you look at the long term effects of roads, basically over time, if there are a lot of vehicles using the road, the animals will not cross.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is that the area becomes fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes fragmented, then towards the long run. You would get a genetically unviable population. So they'd be segregated for a long period. And because of that, they'd be more susceptible to diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is in terms of 100 years and so, you know. But, I mean, the effects can be actually quite devastating over the long run.
Mm-hmm. And I think another effect of roads is that it just makes it easier for poachers to get to them as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. So, in fact, actually, that's the more threatening factor when it comes to roads. Not only, you know, the main roads, but also logging roads as well, when you've got logging inside. So, poachers did not have access into the area before, now have access.
Mm-hmm.
It's typical that around the roads, you also find a lot of, development taking place as well. That's just inevitable.
Okay. And I guess, you know, for someone who doesn't quite understand, why is it so important to preserve tigers? I mean, they are the apex predators, right? So how does that kind of fall into the whole conservation of the biodiversity in a particular area?
Right. If you're looking at it from an ecological point of view, tigers, like you said, are the apex predators. So they regulate the food chain. And what that means is that they regulate, the animals that eat vegetation. So like sambar, pigs, gao, that's the main prey.
Mm-hmm.
And, by having them there, they regulate the ecosystem balance within an area.
Mm-hmm.
If you remove them, you will not immediately find any effect, but over the long term, you would find a drastic change as well, in terms of the habitat as well. A clear example would be the wolves in Yellowstone. They were eradicated in the late 1920s, and they were brought back, I think, in the late 90s. And, you know, over the seven decades, you could see a drastic change in the habitat. And when wolves were brought back, even the trajectory of where rivers used to flow have now come back to how it was before.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the overgrazed areas are now basically flourishing with vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when people look at tigers being removed from an habitat, they can't really see it because, you know, they're not there yet.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to convince people of the ecological disaster that can happen.
Yeah, because it's such a delicate balance, isn't it?
Exactly.
Everything is just there and, you know, we keep doing so many things to kind of disrupt that balance and we'll only see the effects, like you said, much, much later. So,
yeah.
That's why it's getting tough. I'm speaking today to Dr. Mark Ryan Damaraj. He's the Tiger Landscape Lead for WWF Malaysia. And we're discussing, well, the very sad number of Malayan tigers left in our country, but how people are working together for Global Tiger Day 2018, you know, and I mean just in general to get those numbers up. We'll find out more after this quick break. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today is Dr. Mark Ryan Damaraj. He's the Tiger Landscape Lead for WWF Malaysia, and we're discussing Global Tiger Day 2018, which is celebrated annually on the 29th of July, which was just yesterday. So, Mark, not such good news coming out. I mean, despite all the conservation efforts that have been put in place to protect, well, I suppose specifically the Malayan tiger. What other stats do you have for us? I mean, and you know, what's happening? What's failing us in that sense?
Right. I guess my team and I work in the Belum Temenggu Forest Complex. Like I said, it's one of those out of three priority sites in Peninsular Malaysia. The other two are basically Taman Negara National Park and Endau Rompin Forest Complex in Johor and Pahang. Mm-hmm. So in Belum Temenggu, what we've been finding is a huge increase of snares that have been set by foreign poachers. So from 2014 to 2017, we found easily about 500 over snares in that area. And if I mean, for people who don't know what a snare is, basically it's a cable that is tied in a loop and with a noose. And you know, as soon as you step on the trigger, if your foot gets caught in it, the tighter you pull, I mean, if you pull it, basically the noose becomes tighter and you will not be able to get out of it. So, I mean, you can imagine if there are 500 over snares in that area, not just tigers, but any other animal that is caught will eventually die. And so that's what's been happening in Belum Temenggu. And in terms of numbers, it really looks bleak because we have easily a 50% decline in the population of tigers in Belum Temenggu since the last time that we surveyed in 2009 and 2011. Gosh. So this is recent evidence that we have gathered. And it's mainly because of poaching.
I suppose it's for the illegal trade of tiger parts, right? Why does this even happen? Why are tiger parts so sought after?
Right. So the illegal wildlife trade is valued between USD 7 to 23 billion per year. Mm-hmm. So wildlife crime is the fourth most lucrative illegal business in the world after narcotics, human trafficking and weapons. And so as you can see, I mean, I guess in the black market, each tiger could be valued at about 40 to 50,000 USD when it reaches the end buyer. And because it's so lucrative, people are willing to basically go all the way to, you know, send people from one country to another. And you'd be surprised that, you know, the majority of the poachers that come in are basically from Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia.
Right.
And this is because there are no more tigers in those areas and there's a huge demand. And because it's so expensive, only the rich can pretty much afford it. And so it's more like a, you know, it becomes more like a status sort of a thing. But also, you know, a lot of people still believe that tiger and tiger parts as some traditional Chinese medicine properties. But I mean, scientifically, that's not been ever been proven.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, when there's a demand, basically, there'll be poaching and the trade of the species.
Okay, but there's been a lot of conservation efforts going on, right? What's not working then, I suppose, you know, because is it just too wide an area to cover? Is there just not enough manpower to kind of deal with poaching? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think, I mean, for Malaysia, we have a lot of plans, actually, national plans.
Sure.
So we have the National Tiger Conservation Action Plan for Malaysia in 2008. Till 2020, and the plan was basically to increase the number from 500 to 1,000. But you know, we've halved it basically, so we're down to 250 now. The main issue with that plan was that, you know, the resource mobilization as well as funding was not well thought through.
Sure.
So they were not allocated for that purpose. It's still a good plan, and we are in the midst of actually revising that plan. I mean, apart from action plans and, you know, trying to save the habitat with the federal plans such as the Central Forest Spine.
Yeah.
The main issue is basically poaching at the moment, right?
Right.
You know, a year ago when we had these initiatives called the One Malaysia Biodiversity Enforcement Operation Network, it's called One and Beyond, whereby the Department of Wildlife and National Parks and the Army would do several operations per year in the three priority sites. That was quite useful, but it was not a constant sort of operation.
Right.
So, I mean, there are no rangers 24/7 in a particular area. And so, obviously, like what you said, the area is just too large and we don't have enough enforcement personnel on the ground to stop poaching as our first line of defense. To give you an example, Royal Bloom State Park is about 1,175 square kilometers. That's about twice the size of Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 12 rangers, which are
12.
Not armed. Yes, 12 rangers that are not armed. But the rangers are also required to look at, you know, ecotourism, managing infrastructure as well. So there's actually not many people who are doing patrolling in the forest. And when you have just such a situation, I mean, it's so easy to just come in and set snares and, you know, basically plunder our resources.
Right.
And that's the main problem that we see across Peninsula Malaysia.
Okay. And I know that Malaysian conservation leaders, you actually met just this month, I think, for something called a mini lab on conservation assured tiger standards. Am I right? Or what was
yes.
that focused on?
Okay. So conservation assured tiger standards is basically an international accreditation scheme. It looks at the management effectiveness of a park managed for tigers. So it has, you know, standards that will be able to tell a manager, you know, whether you're achieving or moving towards trying to save tigers in the park. So, for example, if you have enough staffing, whether your enactment is, your regulations are in place, whether you have enough protection. So, I mean, some of these elements needs to be assessed in terms of managing a park. If not, you wouldn't know where you are in terms of trying to increase tiger numbers. And so this has been rolled out in other countries, like, for example, in Nepal, India, and Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So Chitwan National Park, for example, was the first park that was accredited. And, you know, basically their protection level is just so good. And tiger numbers are basically increasing that park. But, yeah, I mean, basically this tool is... Well, I mean, it's a tool.
That's okay.
And it's supposed
okay.
to basically guide you to see if you are able to meet those standards. And for Malaysia, the Royal Bloom State Park became the first park in Southeast Asia to register for this scheme. It's a good start. I mean, we've pretty much done the first gap assessment now. And so we know what our gaps are in that park. The next step is to basically try to find the funding basically to fill those gaps. Besides the accreditation scheme, the standards that we discussed about, we also managed to invite the Nepali army and police because in Nepal, they've managed to achieve zero poaching.
Mm.
So we wanted to get them here to basically try to explain how did they do it in Nepal. And it's basically a good effort to emulate from the Malaysian side because, I mean, they've got their army patrolling the areas and they don't have enough enforcement people as well, but they're getting the army to actually help out. The police also, does a lot of intelligence-based gathering. So that helps them in terms of trying to reduce poaching in that area. So I think this is something that Malaysia can basically emulate.
Okay. Would you say we're doing a good job in kind of channeling more funds into, I suppose, putting very sincere efforts into tiger conservation here in Malaysia?
I think it's still insufficient. I mean, it's difficult to put a value to how much is actually needed. But if you look at Belum, for example, you need easily about 35 to 60 rangers, and that's going to cost you easily about R1 million if you want to increase the number of staff to that. And that's also inclusive of getting them armed and trained and, you know, equipped. So that's just one area, and we've got like, you know, 45,000 over square kilometres in Peninsula Malaysia that needs that sort of protection.
Yep.
So you can imagine, you know, the scale that we need in terms of the funding. So it's quite encouraging that, you know, corporates have basically stepped up. For example, Maybank Foundation is basically working with WWF Malaysia to try to conserve tigers in Belum Temenggor. They started this engagement with us since 2016.
Mm-hmm.
It's a four-year program. We've also got, you know, Yayasan Saim Darby, who's also contributed to protection of tigers in Royal Bloom State Park and in Taman Negara as well. So you've got corporates, you know, starting to step up in terms of trying to save tigers in Malaysia. But I think we need a much larger crowd. We need basically other corporates to emulate these corporates and join the bandwagon to basically help us save tigers. If not, you know, I mean, it's going to be really tough to garner that kind of funding.
So what happens if tigers go extinct in Malaysia? What does that mean for us?
I think ecologically, like I mentioned earlier, it's going to have a, you know, imbalance in the ecosystem. But if you looked at it from a national sense of pride aspect, we've got two tigers flanking the coat of arms.
Yes.
It would just seem really weird for us to not be able to explain to the next generation, for example, how we managed to let wild tigers disappear and we still have the coat of arms with our tigers. That, would that mean that we're going to replace these tigers with another animal?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I really don't know how to explain that.
How do you explain to the kids, right?
Yeah. Like,
what is
to the next generation, you know, because basically this is all happening in our generation. Yeah. And if we don't step up now, I just don't know how to explain that.
Okay, but I mean, as somebody with a science background, I mean, are we adopting enough good science practices for conservation purposes here in Malaysia?
I think we've definitely stepped up. Like, for example, like I mentioned, this is the first time we're doing a national tiger census.
Sure.
You know, many countries like India and all did that like maybe ages ago. And we are using basically camera traps now.
Mm.
The main reason why we use camera traps is that, you know, a tiger's stripes is asymmetrical, which means that the left and right flank is different and each tiger has different stripes. So if you set up camera traps in the forest and over time you'll be able to basically figure out the number of tigers in a forest.
Sure.
In the past, people were using park mark sensors in India and that basically was not reliable. And so we've moved on to this method of trying to basically get closer to understanding how tigers, how many tigers there are in the area and what kind of food they have there and how they're responding to all these changes. So I think, yeah, we're basically, you know, on par with other countries that are also doing similar things for tigers.
Okay, all right. And I guess the onus lies on, I suppose, the authorities as well, you know, to not fragment their habitat, to, you know, put more protection in place, to stop roads from being built, for example. I mean, there's always that whole issue between conservation and development, isn't it? So
yes.
There's so much that needs to be taken into account.
Yes, that's always the biggest challenge because, I mean, at one end, we're trying to develop, you know, sustainably. But, you know, on the other end, it's also very difficult to try to maintain and save as much forest as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think we need a paradigm shift in the way we think and value our forests. Very often, it's just short-term benefit that we look at. Okay. If you clear fell an area, convert it to something else, then, you know, you reap the benefits in a very short time. But what you lose out is basically the ecosystem services that forest provides. And very often, you won't know it now. Only when, you know, it's gone, then, like, for example, the floods that happen, right? So a lot of the forests were actually
cleared.
And, you know, as a result, basically, the area was not able to retain the water.
Yeah.
So that's just one example. But, I mean, essentially, at the end of the day, even logging, for example, right, it doesn't contribute much to our GDP, but it's still being done. Maybe the shift should be how we could use forests to look at it from a carbon sink point of view, to look at it from a watershed point of view, and try to conserve these areas for the future generation. And the value of it is basically, I mean, it's just quite immense. The thing is, it's difficult to put a value to it, put an exact value to the amount. You need a lot of, I guess, modeling studies as well.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think that the time has come for us to shift that sort of thinking.
And I guess another issue would be, of course, water security, as you alluded to. I mean, we do remember the water shortages that we had, and that's also, you know, as an indirect result or direct result of, you know, the felling of many forests. And I guess people don't make that connection between how forests actually lead to the water in our taps.
Exactly.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about India? Because I think they've been very, very successful in their efforts, right? So, I mean, what would you say we could emulate from the Indian example? Because correct me if I'm wrong, they've actually like really concerted efforts. They've blocked off places, you know.
Sure.
They've armed their rangers.
Yes.
You know, it's a huge effort.
Yes. Yeah. So they also have 60% of the global population.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think they're the only ones, not only ones, that of the three that have increased their numbers, right?
Yep.
Of the three countries.
Yeah. I mean, rightfully said, India basically has 60% of the global population of tigers, and they managed to do that because To be honest, I think it's mainly got to do with the political will that was established way back in 1970s when Indira Gandhi basically set up the first tiger project. At that time, they were finding a huge, drastic decline of tigers. And basically, the head of governments decided that they want to be able to make tigers a national priority. And so by setting up this tiger task force, they were able to consolidate what's needed in terms of resources, in terms of the funding across the different tiger reserves. And one of the aims was basically to see how they could streamline all these efforts for the country in terms of tiger conservation. And that's how the National Tiger Conservation Authority was formed. And so basically they set aside money, huge amounts of money yearly, and channel it to these tiger reserves to be able to protect it. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, India has, you know, stepped up so much in terms of trying to protect their tiger reserves. And that's simply because they also get a good revenue out of it, because there's a huge ecotourism potential for areas where there are tigers. People go to India to just see tigers. I mean, in Malaysia, that's not possible. Well, I would say it's not possible because our vegetation is basically very dense.
Sure.
But yeah, going back to your question, I think the critical thing that basically is makes a difference is that the highest political will in a country. So not just in India, but also in Nepal, for example, the head of government has basically made sure that the army and the police play a key role in trying to protect their tigers. So, yeah, I guess that's what we need for Malaysia. We need to be able to make tiger conservation a national priority and agenda.
Mm-hmm. Because I suppose in that sense, you know, tigers are the apex, right? So protecting them also protects all the other different species as well.
Right. So, yeah, for tigers, basically, people use them as an umbrella species.
Mm-hmm.
And that's simply because they have large home ranges. So the logic is basically if you protect tigers, you'll be protecting a lot more.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, I mean, we've got a new government in place, and I'm sure WWF Malaysia is working, you know, to kind of talk to them and create the dialogue. If I'm not mistaken, the new minister came for the CATS initiative as well. So, are we seeing some positive progress in that area?
Yes, the minister was there, and we basically sensitized the issue about the poaching and trying to explain to him that tigers needs to be a national priority. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're not just going to stop there. We will reach out to, you know, the other ministries. But essentially what we need now is consolidation of the resources that will be able to tackle this biggest threat, which is poaching.
Okay, all right. And I guess Global Tiger Day just celebrated yesterday. I mean, how does that translate for people like me, you know, just our listeners? What should we do? How can we help in this?
I think the key thing is basically, well, you need to educate yourself. And, you know, I mean, we live in an era where information is just now literally on fingertips. And so basically spreading the message, telling your family members, your friends about the plight of the Malayan tiger and basically asking them to be the voice for tigers. If you can write to your elected representatives and tell them your concerns about, you know, how the national icon is basically being wiped out, that will be a good start.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, you could also be the eyes and the ears for the authorities. So if you see any illegal wildlife crime happening, you could call these two hotline numbers.
Mm-hmm.
The Wildlife Crime Hotline, which is 019-356-4194.
Mm-hmm.
And the Department of Wildlife and National Parks Hotline, which is 1-800-885-151. And of course, don't patronize any you know, restaurants that serves wild meat, whether it's in Malaysia or, you know, elsewhere.
Sure.
I think that's what we can do as consumers as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think another thing is the illegal wildlife trade is just going crazy on social media. So if you come across people selling parts, for example, or offering you, I don't know, tiger cubs, who knows what they do these days.
Exactly.
The key is to, of course, report them straight away.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And any last message you'd like to leave us with today, Mark?
I sincerely hope that we can make tigers a national priority and we can get the support of the armed forces to help us halt the poaching. Because if we don't, really, we're going to lose our tigers in this decade. But I'm hopeful, as you said, we have a new government and I hope that we'll be able to garner that support.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Dr. Mark Ryan Damaraj. He is the Tiger Landscape Lead for WWF Malaysia. And those numbers, again, if you come across any form of illegal wildlife trade, the Wildlife Crime Hotline is 019-356-4194. And you can also contact the Department of Wildlife and National Parks at 1-800-885-151. And if you'd like to find out more about WWF Malaysia, that website is www.org.my. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.